serpents. How many are here wise as serpents? Because even if you try to be naive, you will bump up against stuff that will make you wise. And if you have a problem with that, and you're trying to resist growing up, you want to keep your illusions. I have a little too much overhead here. If you want to keep your illusions, that's not a problem, because you're allowed to keep your illusions. But God says don't, and they will get you in trouble. So you need to get rid of illusions as early as possible, like 13 or 14, or at least by 21. You should have no illusions. But many of us are still, after 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, full of illusions about your ability to please God, your morality, your love for your husband. That's foolish stuff. Unless God does it all, says clearly in the Bible, unless God does it all, it won't be done. You're never going to be a loving person because you're not a loving person. There's no difference between you and the wicked except your faith in Jesus. In other words, the only difference is God. If God has somehow wheedled his way into your life, then there's a difference. But if he hasn't, you can keep the guy at a distance. You can be born again, but still not sanctified. So let's not be naive as to imagine we're improving. There is no improvement in the body of Christ. We're never going to improve. There's never going to be a better age or a better world. This is it. Whatever you are, that's about as far as it goes. You might even imagine, well, I'm going to get better. No, you're not. You may die quicker, but you won't get better. That is, you may stop your illusions faster. You may repent quicker. That's all I mean. But you're not going to improve. You're not going to become more loving. God may be able to use you if you die, but you didn't improve. You just died. There's a difference. How many know there's a difference between improvement and death? The one is where you just stop faking. The other is where God gets all the glory. Well, the other is where you try to pretend like you're actually improving a bit. You're not improving. You never have improved. You never will improve. You never have improved. You're worthless. If apart from me, you can do nothing. If you are apart from God, nothing's going to happen. As far as eternity goes. As far as time goes, nothing's going to happen either. Not in terms of the things that matter. Now, this guy, Marx, grew up in the 19th century. He died in 84. So he lived from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. So he lived all the way through the middle of the century. Pretty much covered the century except for the first and the last 20 years. So he had about... Now, Marx grew up in a Christian home. And the first book he ever wrote was on union with Christ. First book Marx ever wrote. That's pretty powerful. Wrote a nice book on, you know, how Christians are united with Christ. Wrote about the love of Jesus and how Jesus was his everything and how he was completely devoted to him. How many know you can be devoted to Jesus when you're young and then things can change? Many a young man or a young woman, when they're young, have a devotion, a passion for Jesus. But what if you're ignorant? What if that devotion, that passion, though real, is zealous but without knowledge? Then when you get to college or you get to your first job or when you hit reality, boom, you're disillusioned. And you can throw the thing away quickly. You know, it's amazing. One lecture at TCU can cause you to throw away your whole faith. You know, some professor can say four or five sentences about, well, you know, some of you come from a religious background, but that basically is no longer held by the intelligent people of the day. And boom, you just throw your faith away. Say, oh, praise the Lord, I didn't even know that. Because church never prepared you. Your parents never had reality. I don't understand it. We grew up in a Christian environment. You know, well, that doesn't mean anything. Christianity can be fake. It can be empty. It can be just a form. So Karl Marx grew up in a German household, and his father, knowing now, I've read their letters and stuff, His father was no big believer either, even though the father wrote to him and said, "Son, you know, one thing I fear is that a demon will get inside of you. I hope you'll keep your love pure for Jesus." What's wrong with those statements? I mean, it sounds like a good, pious father writing to his good, pious son. "I fear that a demon..." Well, that shows where the father's fears were. "And I want you to keep your love pure." That's as though Carl could do it. That's called moralism or legalism or stupidity. But most Christians believe that way. I would say there's not one in 100 Christians that could pick that out if they read the letter and say, "Well, that's a very nice letter." They wouldn't recognize, right? Wait a minute, man can't do this. You better get your doctrine right. You better keep it clear that we're saved by faith, not by works. And you better make sure your holiness is not just legalism. Because it'll degenerate into license. And you better make sure that your civil liberty, that you have a responsibility in this world, you're not just allowed to go bumping along in prayers and not pay attention to what's going on in life. You've been given liberty as a Christian to fulfill your Christian responsibility, but don't you know you also have a responsibility to your neighbor? And your neighbor is not always Christian. It isn't just the church neighbor, it's the non-church neighbor too. We ought to be leaders in this world, and in the 19th century, the church totally retreated from the Industrial Revolution, from the rise of big business and monopoly, from, you know, the French Revolution, and from all the things that were happening, the church had nothing to say, no vision. And today, I dare say, the church has nothing to say. The only thing it can talk about is in eternity somewhere with some Jesus guy. But it isn't really talking about what's going on here. Now, that's wonderful to talk about Jesus because that's the center. I mean, that's the foundation. That's the beginning. But you cannot just preach that alone. There's also families out there that are living day in and day out, and some kids are on dope. Don't we have anything to say about that? And there's also a government that is corrupt to the core, and all those naive idealists that say the government's corrupt to the core, but they do nothing about it. What good are they? Now you say, "Well, Pastor, aren't you getting a little passionate about this stuff?" Sure, why not? What better thing to do? I'll tell you why. It's because I think Jesus expects that of us. I believe I'm not only a steward for the kingdom, I'm also a steward over the bad guys, and I can identify easily with them. They're just like me. There's no big gap. It's just a hairbreadth difference. At any moment, any of these Satanists can become a Christian. And any of these Christians can grow up and become less naive and less illusioned. Right? Okay. Now, I'm just using this sermon to vent some things. No, I'm not. But I knew somebody was thinking that. Now, let's go on to the Bible. And see what the Bible has to say about this world, because Karl Marx was a young, naive Christian who got swamped, and I'm gonna trace his swamping. You're not gonna read this in a book somewhere, by the way. A lot of what I say, maybe most of what I say, you will never read in some book. Now, what does that mean? Well, all I'm trying to say is it's in this book here. And I pay close attention to this book, and that's why when I read other things, I always measure him by this book. And I measure Carl by this book because that's the book we're going to be tested by someday. It isn't human testing that counts. Human testing, the guy won 1/3 of the world's population. He's obviously powerful, had some good idea or something. So we have to find out why. What's wrong with his thinking that he was able to capture so much of the world, and it's obvious, but not to everybody. It's obvious that was hogwash and garbage and didn't work, and yet today all of the leaders in our own country are doing exactly the same stuff. And I'll show you why. But my point is not to look at, analyze, and criticize that. I don't even care about it. But you can't preach Jesus unless you recognize the power of not following Jesus. That's very powerful because there isn't just a thing as either Jesus or the devil or in between. There is no in between. You're either a follower of Jesus or you're an antichrist, period. You're either dead, earnest, serious, hot, passionate for Jesus, or you're not. And that means you're anti. No, we don't like that. Well, too bad. We want to have a kind of a middle group that's kind of sweet and innocent, and, well, I didn't know. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. And ignorance of Christianity is no excuse. I don't care if you're ignorant or not. The Bible says God wrote it in the stars. So even if a guy never heard about Jesus, I don't care, it's written in the stars. It's written in the trees, in the grass, in the flowers. It's written everywhere. It's designed. Nature has a design to it. I don't care what people say, they're lying. Now, I didn't say that. God said it. Now, God said that the world is not what it appears. So I don't believe anything in the world. Nothing. I believe the world is lying all the time. 100% of the time. And I think the church is lying 98% of the time. Except here. All right, let's read Psalm 2. Why do the heathen, that merely means the nations or the goyim, or the outsiders, the not Jewish people, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? So people rage and people imagine vain things. Well, this is Karl Marx. Karl Marx is one of these guys. Why does Karl rage and imagine a vain thing? But now it's talking about people. Now, it's not talking about an individual. It's talking about people and nations. Why do the nations rage? Why are they mad? Why are they angry? What is stirring up the nations? Here's God talking about the subject. The kings of the earth, the presidents, kings, top dogs, the guy with the executive power. The kings of the earth set themselves. That's they make a decision to establish themselves, to secure themselves, to set themselves, to ally themselves, to make treaties among themselves, to covenant together, to do stuff. Beware of every treaty, every alliance, every coming together of the kings of the earth. It will never be for good. Did you hear me? Every coming together of every king is going to be for evil. I'm just reading the Bible. Why do the nations rage? And why do the peoples imagine a vain thing? In other words, why are people so naive? Why are they imagining something that will never happen? Some utopia that will never exist, like a better world. How many are believing there's a better world coming? I mean, there is in Jesus, but there's not in this side. It's not going to get better. Well, I know we don't have washboards now. We have, you know, washing machines and stuff like that. So, yes, if that's a better world, if that's the world you're looking for, we got it. There it is. The fact that only a few people have it, well, that's a problem, and then you have to work at that. If you think that's worth working for, that's what the New World Order is all about. A kind of a heaven on earth without God. If that's what America's all about, if that's the American dream, then we're going for it. Only a few, of course, are going to get it. It won't be for the masses. I'm sorry. That's a vain thing to think we're all going to get part of the pie. There isn't enough pie after the first few guys eat it. You know, they just carve it up and say, okay, let's divvy this thing up. And then one guy takes half of it and the other guy takes a fourth. And then, you know, where are the kids? Well, there's no pie left. So there ain't going to be a pie. Unless there's a God, the kids will all eat it. And the older kids will get it before the little kids. Unless that little kid is fast. Sometimes the little kid gets it first. But, you know, if it weren't for parents, the little kids would probably never get anything. Because the other kids would grab it all. Are you hearing me? Now, I believe there's a God. And I believe He's telling us how the world works and why He's setting up a different deal. Why do the heathen rage and why do the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers, same thing, take counsel together. So whenever they set up a council, like you've heard of the Security Council or the United Nations, Antichrist. Did you hear what I just said? Antichrist. Not just not helpful or inept or broke or, you know, needs some more power or nice, Nice try, but. No. Antichrist, against God. It's Nimrod's original idea to bring the nations together in a political, economic, social hegemony. In other words, to subdue the earth by the big guys getting together. How many know big guys are smarter than we are? Those are just our representatives, and they're sitting there pretending like they're representing me. They're not. They don't represent me. They don't even got the same kind of salary. What do they know what it's like? They don't. They don't live where I live. They don't talk like I talk. They just lie to me. And they don't care. So when they sit in council, that doesn't help me a bit. All they're going to do is come up with a new way to steal from me, a new way to cheat me, a new way to destroy me, never to help me. I don't care how much you think, well, they did that nice thing. That's God. If anything good ever comes out of anything, well, you can take it as 99% of the time, probably 100. It's not going to be to your interest. Who can represent your interest but you? You think you've got a representative that represents you? No way. How naive. The people imagining a vain thing. Somehow the world's going to get better. We're going to have progress. No. It's only when men fight their government and do their own thing that anything good ever happens. Government is never the ally of the people. We made a government that when we bound it, that's the thing to do with a government, is bind it. Don't let it, you know, balance it off and separate it out, and don't let them have big salaries. The early founders didn't have big salaries at all. They did it almost for free. Now it's corrupt because now a guy can actually make a living off of it. He'll never make a decision again because he's going to do everything he can to get more perks, more deals, more favors, more benefits, both in office and after office. Now, that is not what the founding fathers had in mind. They knew that government is corrupt, and when you get an accumulation or concentration of power like the fast track with Clinton or something, you're just going to have more corruption. More ways to corrupt. We don't want an efficient government. I'm not talking about government, I'm talking about Jesus here. It sounds like that, but too bad. They don't own anything. I can talk about whatever I want to talk about. Hello? Because that's what God talked about. God didn't say, well, I don't handle that area. God's bigger than these folk. And God wants us to talk that way. We are not creatures of the state or of some United Nations or some world, you know, power. No, we're creatures of God. God is the one that has absolute, immutable sway, power, authority over all of us. And God gave us a job to do. Therefore, I don't care what anyone else says. I'm going to do what God says, and God will have to back me up. He better have a police force bigger than theirs. He better have atomic bombs bigger than theirs. He better have whatever power and authority he needs bigger than theirs. Guess what? He ain't bad in a scrap. God has ways and means. I mean, he's powerful. The guy's pretty good, especially when you snub him. And I could give illustration after illustration of the kind of Herods in the world who said, I am a God, and they drop over dead in the moment they say it. Our God is a fearsome God, and when you mess with him too much, when you go, you know, you just kind of become cavalier and arrogant, like the Beatles or something, when they say, I'm bigger than Jesus or something, you have just committed your demise. Don't forget, God still runs the show. And though he gives you freedom because he doesn't want to take away your freedom, he doesn't want you to come because you have to. He wants you to come because you want to. So he gives you the freedom to mess up or not. But he did tell you, don't mess up. Go this way. And as I said, he didn't say, be a good boy. He said, you can't be a good boy, but just have faith in me. And what he wants you to do is be happy now. Get your doctrine right. Get your holy life right. Get your liberty right. Now, we're dealing with the 19th century, which is the era of world mission. Now, one mission to the world was like David Livingston or Hudson Taylor or William Carey, some of the ones we've looked at. They fought. They wanted to take the gospel, the good news, to the poor people, to the distressed, to the masses, to the ignorant, to everybody in the world. They wanted to bless everybody. They want to take good news to everybody. And in David Livingston's case, not just Jesus, but also free enterprise. I mean, take Africa, don't just give them the Jesus message, give them also some bread and some ways to make a living themselves. I mean, don't just give them bread. No, teach them how to make their own bread and hook up with them and so on. So they had a vision to help the people. Marx had the other vision. Karl Marx came up with another vision. Say, I have a vision that will capture the whole world too. Not just Jesus has a monopoly on this. I got one. But the Pope had another vision. I got a vision too. And the monopolist had another vision. We got a vision too. Everybody had a vision for capturing the whole world and keeping to themselves, and all those players are still around. Traditional religion still has a vision, and that vision is not going to help the people. True religion, biblical religion, still has a vision, and that one is the only one that will. The monopolists still have a vision, and that's the only other vision there is. And Marx has a vision which looks friendly on the surface, but underneath is pure Satanism. And so it's no different than the other guys. In the end, Marx is really not any different. He is a capitalist. He's pretending like he's a socialist, but socialist is just a word. It's just a name. It's just something that says, basically, let the little people be all socialized and let us big people be the capitalists. So socialism is for the masses. Capitalism is for the elite few. But they don't bother to say that. They didn't tell you that. They made it look like so the little people would be confused again because they're naive. Oh, yeah, we're going to set you free. And then they lock the chains as they say that. Yeah, yeah, come over here. We're setting you free. And people are so stupid and naive, and the church has nothing to say, so that people just walk to their bondage going, whoa, what a disillusionment this thing was. That's why the Berlin Wall fell, because it didn't work. That's why the evil empire fell, because it didn't work. But it never was intended to work. Nobody ever thought it would work. Nobody. Nobody. Oh, yeah, naive people. And a lot of Christian pastors and priests. Kind of liberation theology in South America and so on. That's all hogwash. Oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to set people free. Che Guevara and, you know, all this kind of junk. Now, they don't set anybody free. Is anybody free in South America? I don't think so. Are they free in Bolivia? I don't think so. Are they free in Mexico? No, the drug lords run it. And behind them, the bankers. No, no, no. The world is not what you want it to be. It is what it is. Now, Jesus is the only one giving good news. Everybody else is lying. All the others are conspiring together in a lie. The naive idealist cannot help us. The traditionalist cannot help us. They're always on the wrong side of the deal. Now, I'm just getting started. Now, wait. The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord. Isn't that interesting? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together. In other words, against the Lord. The only reason they counsel is they don't want to talk to Him. So they come together and say, let's kick God out. Now, the key to Marx's life, which is the same key to all the other high priests, is no God. So, that's it. Whatever God says, he's going to do the opposite. Now, I'll show you how that happened, how he became a good little Christian boy and turned out to be a monster. And he was called Monster by his pals, his friends. Engels. I have found myself a monster. But that was not a pejorative term. That meant that's the guy I'm looking for, a monster. Someone that will destroy. And Marx was that boy. The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. Who is the anointed of God? It's Jesus. But it's also you and I. Not only does the devil hate Jesus, it hates anybody who follows Jesus. We're the hated and the hunted. The fact that in America we have a little freedom, I'll tell you, it's not because some government gave it to us. We did it. We did it against all law, against everything. You know why we did it? We did it because we believe in the Bible. That's how we got to where we are. And that's why our war was not to kill off the British, it was just to be free. To defend ourselves from. Not to attack. Hello? It's different. French Revolution was to attack and destroy the church and the monarchy and everything. We didn't go over to King George and fight a war with him and try to get him off the throne. We just said, leave us alone. Have your own deal. It's different. totally different. This one was born out of the Scripture, which said, look, we don't have a noble cause here, and if we don't write out our noble cause and then trust in God, we don't have anything going for us. But Marx had a totally different idea. His idea came from 1776. A man named Adam Weishaupt. You remember? You go back and you can get that tape if you want. And see how Adam Weishaupt worked within the Masonic movement to develop the Illuminist or the Illuminati or the witchcraft, which now controls the world. The guy did a good job. It worked. Very few of our media people, very few of our school officials, very few of our leaders are not part of that witchcraft. Did you hear me? Was I unclear? Did I say that, you know, that you didn't understand what I, did you need interpretation? Most of the leaders of the world today, they were my teachers. The ones I emulated. When I went to school, if you go to SMU, TCU, or Yale, or Harvard, or wherever you want to go, go anywhere, they're all the same. Most of them are all consciously and deliberately. Now, a lot of them aren't. They're just doing their job and they're just going along with whatever. They're just kind of mediocrities that'll just spit out and spout out anything that'll get them along. But those that are in the know, who are thinking, they deliberately, consciously know what they're doing. Now, we don't like that because we're naive. We don't want to think that there are really people that are living a double life. Even though we do it all the time, we don't want to think anyone else does. We know that we're hypocrites. We know that we come to church and we say Jesus, but actually we go home and live our own lives the way we want to. We know that. But we imagine somehow in our imagination, in our vain imagination, but our leaders are nobler than that. And yet we know that's stupid, but somehow we don't want to think about that. We don't want to face that. Is why would you ever trust any of your politicians, any school teacher, anyone else, who isn't openly for Jesus? Well, we're going to find out because that's no longer the case. So you're going to find out. Now industry, all the big industries and so on, they're all controlled. All the leaders of the biggest, you know, corporations are all controlled. They all go to the same tribe. They all conspire together against us and against the Lord. They all have pyramids. They're all into pyramids. They're all into, you know, psycho-cybernetics. They're all into, you know, sensitivity training. They're all into all kinds of nonsense and garbage and junk, Hinduism, Buddhism, and all kinds of things. They're all into that. Now, God told about that. Here we are, thousands of years ago, like three and a half, but even more than that. But, I mean, just right here, I'm reading right now a book that's, you know, probably about 1,000 B.C., so about 3,000 years ago. Here's what they say when they come together. Let's break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. So what's he saying? The wicked come together only to do one thing. Something is binding them. Something is holding the wicked from taking control. What is it? So they're against the Lord and his anointed because they feel the Lord has bound them up. You know what binds them? The Ten Commandments. Religion and morality. That's binding them. And they want to snap those bands. Things holding me. You know, I can't just sin and get away with it. I can't just exploit and destroy and get away with it. For example, right now, one of the big agendas is to kill off 2 to 3 billion people off the earth. And quickly. Now, to do that, you have to have a war, a disease, or you have to have come up with something that will, you know, maybe famine, something. Famine, pestilence, sword. You got to come up with something that will destroy billions of people, and it has to look like it was innocent. Like nobody did it. Hello? But when you're convinced, and I could name names, I'll name one. Prince Charles's dad. You know, he believes, and he's one of the top Masons in the world, he believes he was once the head. He probably still is, but maybe they switch jobs around and so on. He said the greatest thing, if you ask me what the greatest thing in the world would be, is that we could get rid of about 2 billion people. That's his greatest wish, his greatest desire. That's the thing that deeply moves him. Can you imagine that the tree which beareth apples, that the apple would be far from the tree? Can you imagine that the world leaders, who all get together all the time, they have these big meetings, we all come together, they don't want to see billions of people on the earth. They would like to see Rwanda and Burundi. That's wonderful, because that just eliminated several million people. We've got to get a lot more. My gosh, the birth rate's growing at 2 to 3%. Let's try to get a 3 to 4% death rate. If we could, let's have a disease like AIDS. Let's get some diseases, Ebola. Let's get some diseases going to try to work on not America. It's not working here. It's working in a place where they don't have names and addresses. So that they don't even show up in the paper. Have you read about it? Do you know that whole nations are perishing? Well, they don't want you to know. Yet it takes place every day. So why do they conspire? Because they have these bands around them and they don't like it. I mean, that doesn't sound moral to a simpleton like us. You can't just kill people. And their thought is, of course you have to. Of course you have to, because there's too many people on the earth. How will we keep the elephant herd going, which we can hunt? If there are, you know, locals chopping trees down and stuff, the elephants need that, and we have to hunt them. So just to keep our hunting grounds, we need to reduce, and some say, to maybe 250 million people. In other words, kill everyone else but the population of America. And that should be how many this earth can actually sustain in a sustainable group, 250 million. And they might, you know, admit, okay, a billion. And some will say, okay, 2 billion. But whatever the figures are that we're playing with, definitely not 5 or 6 like we are now. Oh, no, definitely not. And of course, these are numbers. But the idea is, now I'm justified if the right thing to do is not what God says, but the right thing to do is kill off 2 to 3 billion people. And when I was in high school, just a kid in the 50s, I remember they were teaching us then about that there were too many people on the earth. And it was kind of new to a dumb kid, you know. Well, there are. You know, I mean, I didn't know that. I never had added up everybody. And I didn't know there were too many. I didn't even know what our number was, you know. But these guys had figures and facts of how the whole world was falling apart. And that we just couldn't take, you know, and then that was only, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 billion at that time. I think it was 2.5 billion or something. Now it's twice that or something. I don't know how fast it went, but whatever it was. I didn't know we had a big problem like that. I mean, you know, I didn't notice how close the houses were getting. When you drive out of the cities, you know, there's a lot of open land, but I just never noticed that it wasn't enough. And that in the world's jungles and so on, we need to cut it all back so that a few people can exploit it all for their own purposes and not have to have a conscience about it. My gosh, let's just get rid of the native people and nobody knows. Hello? And let's tell all the middle class, stupid middle class people, that their moral obligation is to have less babies. Their moral obligation is to, you know, tone it down, hold it down, garbage bags, all that. You know, let's restrict you. Let's bond you and free us. Hello? I mean, no, when they make those rules, that doesn't even affect the well-to-do. They live in another world. Hello? So, this is good preaching. But it's just right out of the Bible. I'm just reading what it says. Let's cast away their cords far from us. Now, here's God's conclusion. He that sits in the heavens shall laugh. So God's sitting up in the heavens and he's going, look what's happening down there. And the guys have asked. You know, and I don't know who he's laughing with, but he's laughing. I guess Jesus is up there laughing with him. And the Holy Spirit. So they're laughing up there over this plan that the wicked have to overthrow us. It's kind of like, it isn't going to work. And yet it seems like it's working. It seems like the bad guys are really doing what they want to do. They swagger through the earth. You know, their eyes are, you know, sunk deep into their heads because they're so well off. It doesn't seem like they're, you know, having problems like we do. Man, you know, when, I don't know, it's amazing how God would put this stuff out. I don't know who he's impressing. Because the world press doesn't look this way. And Marx was one of the brave ones in the 19th century that said, hey, let's just tell God he's out of business. He that sits in the heavens shall laugh, the Lord shall have them in derision, then he shall speak to them in his wrath, and vexed them in his sore displeasure. And here's what he says, I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. So God's saying, look, 2,000 years ago, I'm not even waiting for 1998. I put my king up 2,000 years ago. You can look at the guy. Here's my vote. Here's my guy. I'll put him up. Now, the devil hasn't yet put his guy out. We don't even know who the Antichrist is yet. I do, but I ain't telling. And Robert does, but he's guessing. Now, you know, so, but God put his guy out a long time ago. God already put his guy out. I was just kidding. Praise God. Yet I have set. You remember the kings set themselves? Well, God said, I've set something too. I've set Jesus. In other words, okay, there's the measure. See what you can do. So now we already know God's plan. God was first. God came out first. Here's my guy. Now, who you got? And they're afraid to bring their guy out. They're scared. They're chicken to get their guy out. Especially while we still have guns. But they'll get rid of the guns too. And then it'll be total slavery. That's the only thing holding you right now. You don't know that. But they will get rid of everything until they can have their way. But you know what? God's sitting in the heavens and laughing. Why be nervous? Why care? As a matter of fact, you know what they're doing? They're just storing up everything for us. Let the wicked win. It doesn't scare me. It doesn't bother me. I've already made my decision. I like Jesus. I'm a Jesus guy. I'll go for Jesus. Even if they do everything they plan to do and want to do, I don't care. Hello? So my insides are bigger than their insides. You see, they can lie to themselves all day long, and it doesn't bother me. I used to be like them. I used to be totally like them. In fact, I wanted the job. I will declare the decree. The Lord hath said to me, Thou art my son this day, have I begotten thee. So that's the day he was set. The day he was begotten was the day he was set. Ask of me. So when did Jesus become king? At his birth. Isn't that interesting? He didn't become king on the cross. He didn't become king later. No, he was king the day he came in. He said, I'm taking over. He's just a little kid. But he was, ahead of his time. Hello? Along with the king. So God actually had kings come to his birth to announce, hey, this is the king. Even the world, the Gentiles came. There wasn't Jewish people kneeling down. None of the Jewish people were kneeling down. No. The only kings that acknowledged him were the Gentiles. They came and said, hey, this is the real guy. This is the king. We worship this guy. You don't worship kings. You give them, you know, their honor and so on and so forth. But this guy we worship. I mean, no, King Jesus isn't just a little baby. He came deliberately so he could look scrubby so that everyone would reveal their hearts. See, if he had come in all his power and glory, no one would have shown what they were really thinking. Because they'd go, oh yeah, we're with him. You know, they would have lied. But this way they could go, he could just despise him. Could kill him. And that's why he came. He wanted that. Because it wasn't his death that was of interest to him. What was of interest is your heart. And every one of us killed him. All of our sins killed the guy. It wasn't the bad guys, it was us. I mean, there's no difference. We all had sin. So he died for all of us. And then he set us all free. So, okay, it's finished. Okay, that's over. Now let's move on. So I'm moving on with the guy. I'm no longer conscious of sin. I mean, I'm conscious of it, but I don't dwell on it too long. Like, thank you, Jesus. Whoa, thank you, Jesus. Boy, do I need a Jesus. I seem to sin daily. How about y'all? Sometimes I've sinned 5 or 6 times in one day. I really have. And so I need him all the time. Is there anybody like me is a multiple day sinner? I mean, you know, it's amazing. Ask of me, and I will give thee the heathen
for thine inheritance. So all these guys that are gathering together and conspiring, they're his inheritance. It's kind of like they're working for us. Don't worry about the New World Order. They're working for you. I mean, I oppose them with all that I've got, but you know, in the end, I chuckle to myself going, these guys are actually collecting everything for me. Collectivism, that's for me. Oh, it's a collection agency for me. Ah. So I have a little fun. I can oppose them knowing that I'm going to get it anyway. The meek shall inherit the earth. I know you want to hear about Carl. I just use these guys to preach. Ask of me, and I will give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron, Jesus will. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Be wise now, therefore, O ye kings. Be instructed, ye judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish from the way. When his wrath is kindled but a little, blessed are all they that put their trust in him. It's a powerful, powerful word. Now, this guy Karl Marx is really interesting. Karl Grupp, as I said, he was a poet. The boy wanted to be a poet. He never was a scientist. He never was a historian. He never was any of that stuff. He wasn't even... Well, he was just a word crafter, a philosopher. A poet and a philosopher are the same thing. They're all playing with stuff. They aren't serious. Marx is not a serious person. It's like a joke. These guys just do stuff like that, impelled by the devil, but they just do stuff like that jokingly. Freud, Marx, Darwin. None of them were serious people. You take them as so serious, like, yes, this was real science. It was not real science. That's pseudoscience. They weren't doing anything serious. Oh, yeah, when he wrote on corals. But when he actually made some conclusions, he was then playing. Look, science is hard evidence, hard facts, taste, tell, touch, smell, and so on. And then you make some conclusions. That's something repeatable. Everybody can do it in China, top of the mountain, below. You know, you can do the same thing over and over again and test the thing out. But this origin stuff and destiny stuff is not science. Man came from a gorilla. Well, that's silly. Nobody ever saw that. So how can that be science? It's not. It's just a guess. It's just a silly story. Hello. I mean, if it's really true, let's go find one. Let's go look at one and observe one. That was what science is all about, observation. Let's observe one. Let's see the earth beginning. So I can make an analogy as this is to that, so that must be true over here. Well, that's just an analogy. You know, because I see some ammonia coming together with, you know, chlorine, then I say, see, it almost produced something. Therefore, if I just, you know, if I expand it just a little bit and I hypothesize a little bit and just add about a billion years and stuff like that, I can imagine that the earth was like that. You know, well, I'm just imagining stuff. I mean, that is not science. And nobody can do it, nobody can repeat it, nobody can observe it, nobody can prove it. It's pure hogwash. Especially when they say that man was not created the way the Bible says. Fine, great, prove it. All right. Now, Marx grew up in a Christian home, and I told you the first book he wrote was The Union of the Faithful with Christ. Now, here's what he wrote. Through the love of Christ, we turn our hearts at the same time toward our brethren, who are inwardly bound to us, and for whom he gave himself as a sacrifice. And then he went on, and he's obvious, that's a Christian. It sounds just like every other typical church-going Christian, even from a little more fervent. And then he said, we should do things not for the sake of ambition and glory, but only for the sake of Christ. Now, this is Karl Marx, young man, not yet 18. This young man is fervently in love with Jesus, but he hadn't gotten out of gymnasium yet. He hasn't graduated to the higher level. But all of a sudden, something happens to the guy, and no one seems to quite know what. Because by the time he's 18, he starts writing some really weird stuff. But at his graduation certificate, it said, his knowledge of Christian faith and morals is fairly clear and well-grounded. This was written on his certificate. So, by the time he was, 16, 17, they put down, his knowledge in religious matters, fairly clear and well-grounded. In other words, he knows what's going on, spiritually, religiously. And we can tell from the letters he wrote his dad and everything, he was a Christian, outwardly. Now, but in a few years, something had happened, and it seemed like he began coming together with devil worshipers. A man like Moses Hess. He had definitely imbibed in Hegel. George Friedrich Hegel. Now I'll show you Hegel because he's interesting. And another man, Feuerbach. These became some of his heroes as he starts writing this weird poetry, which I'm going to read to you in a second. But here's Hegel's idea. His idea is this, that every idea has the seeds of its own destruction inside of it. In other words, it has a contradiction inside of it. So he called that the thesis. The opposite comes out. And so you get the antithesis. Okay? And so then there's an opposition and a contradiction set up and a war between these two deals. They're each warring against the other. Now, they eventually then, if time goes on, they will synthesize. Aufgehoben. They will synthesize into a beautiful synthesis which says, a little bit right here, a little bit right here, not all right, but here, we put them together, and whoa, look at that. Now, this is called logic. This is not Aristotelian logic, which is, a cow is a cow and it's not a boat. A is A and it's not non-A. That's Aristotelian logic, normal kind of logic, the kind we know of. This is this and it's not that. But this is a different kind of logic. This is actually not this, but it actually has that inside of it, which though they're opposite on the surface, can actually be synthesized into a new this, which is not the original this, nor the that. How many know that is talk? That is what philosophy is all about. That is why I am brilliant. That is called dialectic. That is called dialectic. There's a logic here. This is the dialectic, you see. There's a logic here that says this synthesis is actually a new thesis which produces a new antithesis, which produces a new thesis, which produces a synthesis, and so on. And it just keeps going, so it's evolutionary. It never arrives. And Hegel said that when the thing is all over, and you have an idea, and it goes to its opposite, and then they synthesize, and then it's a new idea with a new opposite, new synthesis, eventually they end up in pure reason. Now, instead of it being God, Hegel didn't say it was God, it was just impersonal reason. But watch what Marx did. He dumped this thing on its head. Marx was one of his students. So Marx said, hey, wait a minute. Instead of an idea, let's change that. Let's not make that an idea. Let's make that material. Let's get real. Let's get down on the real world here. The real things in life are material, economic. Man finally is not just an idea, like religion and all that. That's just talk. That's just idea talk. No, this guy is a poet too, though. So he says, let's substitute materialism so you can have something like capitalism. Well, I'll give you an even better one. Let's have feudalism. The feudalism. All right? And that will eventually produce capitalism, which will eventually produce socialism. Okay? Now, so he felt that whatever you did, you could prove then by irrefutable logic, inevitable, that given enough time, history will work itself out, not to pure reason, but to utopia. But he said, I'm not a utopianist. I don't believe in some perfection. But I do believe in a state, not just socialism, because this keeps going up the scale. Pretty soon, here's capitalism over here like today, and here's socialism over here. It will eventually produce communism. And in communism, there will be no... See, there's no property owners here. No property owner. Here, we have private property. And this is the key to dialectical materialism. Private property. But over here, there is no private property. Oh, yes, it's not private, but it's public. The state owns it all. So you have a state dictator. The state now owns everything instead of the individuals. That way, there are no bad individuals because they don't have anything. And that's logical, huh? Yeah. You don't have anything if you don't have a J.P. Morgan and then some, you know, slob at the bottom. Hey, take away all private property, there won't be any J.P. Morgan. Then all people will be friendly and nice, see? Because the state will be benevolent. Oh, no, at first the state has two jobs. One, it has to defend itself from all its opposition. Number two, it has to take care of the welfare of the people. So it's a welfare state. Okay, there you have it. Defense against the bad guys. And forget the fact that it might even be offense. You know, we might actually use our force and our power not just to defend ourselves from these old capitalist, you know, pigs. No, no, no. We might have some of those still in Russia or, you know, Germany or England or something. So then we will actually try to force this thing and use a little violence. Let's not just have ideas, because this is not an idea thing. This is a material thing. So we're going to put idea plus force. Nobody's ever done that before. So Marx was being rather clever. Hey, let's add idea to force. And then we'll produce communism where there'll be no state. The state will wither away. And there'll be no class. There won't be rich and poor. There won't even be state and people. It'll be just the people. Everything will be the people. And so there won't be any need for force, and everyone will be happy. That's not utopia. What is it? It's hogwash. And the fact that it's never come about is, well, it just takes time. Another million years or a billion years or something, we'll get that thing. I mean, no, that's kind of heaven. Not after earth, but on the earth. Heaven on earth. Man, that is quite a promise. It's, well, you know, we're not there right now. We're in a transition stage. But there will be pie in the sky by and by. Not up in heaven, but down here. All God's children are going to have shoes somewhere. Now, if you buy that, then you buy Christianity when it's perverted too. Because that's a lie. God doesn't want us to postpone all of our goodness till later because you don't have any goodness anyway, so start doing it today because it's Him. There's no excuse for saying, well, I'm waiting for heaven. I mean, in the next world, I'm nasty here, but in the next world, I'm going to be a lot nicer. No, if you don't do it here, you're not going to do it there because it ain't you doing it anyway. It's God. Therefore, I don't have to improve or change. I'm not waiting for anything. Heaven can start right now. I can't love Peggy tomorrow. I love her now or I never love her. Do you hear me? I'm not going to love her later. I used to say that to her, and that's how I know. I say, well, honey, you know, we're just working on this. And it's going to come. He said, I want it now. She's nasty, I'm telling you. She's not at all what you think. But I like her. She's a tiger. She doesn't look like one, but she is a tiger. So she said, I want it now. And I want you to say, I love you now. And, you know, but she just had all these rules and so on. I didn't cotton to those too good. But she just said, that's okay. Jesus will get you. She's right. All right, now. So all of this nonsense is what Marx worked out. But did he just work this out? Was it really just a, you know, a philosophical thing that he worked out? Or was it somebody else's idea that he was just putting in place? In other words, where did all this come from? Now, I want to read you his poetry. I want to read you what he actually wrote, because it's always fun to read what these guys write. I wish to avenge myself and the one who rules above. He wrote that in 1841. That was just prior to the Civil War, just when capitalism was, you know, flourishing. He heard about the English people, the factory owners who were making all this money, and the little people working 10 hours a day in the slave thing. And, you know, he knew that, man, that is bad. That's bad. And being a Christian, naively, he thought to himself, hey, we can make a correction on that. Get more justice in the church, because the Pope is doing nothing about it. Church of England's doing nothing about it. That's wrong. Why doesn't the church speak up? Well, fully on the church then. If God's going to be that way, skip God. Now, he could have kept God, but anybody who's tried to work with God has found out he's not easy to work with. Have you discovered that? God is not easy to work with. You know, you think, okay, God, I'm determined to do this. Now, you cooperate here with me because I'm doing this for you. You know, and God just doesn't do that. Like, make your husband improve. Have you ever found that out? Have you tried that? I will get God. I know we are right. You know. Well, it doesn't matter. Your husband is not going to change. You ever notice that? He is. I don't know why, but he's sinful. You better learn to love him just the way he is. Hello? Hello? Just close your eyes and don't look. Just pretend. Because God made a promise and said, this is the man I have given to you. He did not say he's perfect. He did not say that. He did not say he's perfect. He didn't say he'll look perfect. He didn't say he'll act perfect. He just said, he's roughly what I had in mind. And therefore, don't look. He's just kind of, trust me. Just trust me. Because people on this earth are not perfect. Just love them imperfect. Love your mom imperfect. Love your dad imperfect. Love your pastor imperfect. It's good preaching. I wish to avenge myself and the one who rules above. This is a poisonous thought. There's something. This guy's angry. All people who are naive get angry. Because naive people believe certain things. They have a picture in their head. When it doesn't work, they get frustrated. When they get frustrated, they soon get angry. You know, but because they're Christians, they don't have to let it out. So what he did was created communism. He sublimated all of that stuff. Freud will later tell us, without God also. Another guy that doesn't need God. He'll tell us that God is not pure reason, nor is he communist state. It's just some sex drive called the id. You know, I mean, they're all just playing the same game. It's all the same game. They have a fraternity, a group. This is not just individuals coming up with this stuff. These professors like Feuerbach, Leibniz, Descartes, Spinoza, all of these guys who are the great men, the great writers of the great literature of the Western world are all Satanists. So when you go to TCU, what you're really studying is Satanism. You think you're sending your kid off to learn about psychology, you're learning about Satanism. Sociology, Satanism. Now, I know they try to dress it up so it looks scientific. They always try to make it look scientific. Put charts and graphs and stuff as though it's scientific. Put some numbers there. That's just games. There's no science about it. Eve had three personalities. She might have had seven. You know, the Bible just clarifies she's demon-possessed. That's simple. All those voices inside of her, it's just... But they'll dress it up like it's something that we can handle apart from God. Oh, yeah? Try it. The psychiatrists themselves go nuts. That's how they got the job. Hello? Now, I wish to build my throne high overhead. This is a poem that he wrote. The hellish vapors rise and fill the brain till I go mad and my heart is utterly changed. See this sword? The Prince of Darkness sold it to me. This is his poetry. While for us both the abyss yawns in darkness, you will sink down. I will follow laughing, whispering in your ear, descend, come with me, my friend, and soon I shall howl gigantic curses on mankind. This is prior to socialism. He never even thought of this idea yet. This is poetry he wrote as a young man, long before he became a socialist. He didn't even believe in socialism. He had even heard about it, and he totally rejected it. Ha! Eternity! She is our eternal grief, an indescribable and immeasurable death, vile, artificially conceived to scorn us. Ourselves, the clockwork, blindly mechanical, made to be the fool calendars of time and space, having no purpose save to happen, to be ruined. If there is something, these are all just taken from various poems. If there is something which devours, I'll leap within it. though I bring the world to ruins, the world bulks between me and the abyss. I will smash it to pieces with my enduring curses. I'll throw my arms around it. Harsh reality. Embracing me, the world will dumbly pass away and then sink down to utter nothingness, perishing with no existence. That would be truly living. Now, this is not a man that you really believe is a Christian. He was a Christian, and somehow by age 18, he's writing this vile filth. What happened to him? It isn't just disillusionment. That would be, he was absolutely mad. He's absolutely angry, frustrated. But he became involved with satanic people. People that deliberately, knowingly, not in your simple sense, but in the most sophisticated sense, introduced him to the initiation rites. Okay? So he began to put out their program, to put out their manifesto, to actually write, because in a few years he's going to write the Communist Manifesto for that group. And you should see what he calls all those people. He despises every one of them. He's a master of words. So this whole idea of Karl Marx growing up as a Christian, then becoming an anti-Christian, then becoming a socialist, socialism is only a pretext for his anger. And that's why in the revolution the facts were this. They never did care for little people. They were supposed to produce this thing where the downtrodden, you know, the downtrodden. Here's the picture. This is the bad guy and this is the good guy. Here's the bad guys down here. The bad guys are up here. Bad. And all the good people are down here. The exploited, the masses. The exploited masses. Opiated by the middle class morality. Opium. All right. Now these exploited masses are the workers. They're called the workers. Okay? And up here is the king, monarch, you know, whoever, the president, and so on and so forth. And then here's all of his sycophants, those nobles that are around him, the inner elite. The inner elite, the party, you know, whatever. And so the middle class, these are also workers, but they're the ones who are caught in the middle. And they've got morality. They're Catholics or they're Protestants or something like that. And they oppress everybody under this group. So this group provides the religion for them, and religion is nothing more. Religion is an opiate which basically helps these people to feel good about what's happening to them and gives these people vain hopes which they'll never arrive at and justifies these people. So the only purpose of religion is always conservative, to conserve what is and to prevent anyone else from getting in. Now, this is actually the case. I agree with him. I agree with this analysis. Not quite, but somewhat. In other words, from a very superficial point of view, that has taken place. What you're missing in here is reality. In fact, what are you going to do with a Hudson Taylor that comes from this middle class, and he wants to set people free, and he actually does love people, and he actually sacrifices and so on? What about him? Well, he doesn't want to count him. Are you hearing me? And in a way, I can't blame him, because the church was not helping. The church made no vision, had nothing. Without a vision, my people perish. We didn't say anything about this industrial revolution, where there were a few people at the top, these well-to-do types that actually got over the kings, so that the kings were no longer kings. And you began to see all during the 19th century the fall of one king after another, as the industrial leaders, the bankers, became the real kings of the earth. And they did oppress, and they were called ruthless. You know, the robber barons in our country and all the oil guys and so on who are now legit and they send all their kids to Harvard. But, you see, those guys only got legitimacy later after they got all their dough, after they did all the stuff, slave trade and all kinds of things that they did, and then they justify it with religion. J.P. Morgan was a great Episcopalian. Even made the altar. He had a little altar pulpit, you know, built. I didn't mean an altar, but the pulpit. A real fancy, nice one, all about Jesus. That doesn't make the guy any good. You see? So that could tick off a naive idealist. That could make you mad as, wow, the church is doing nothing, and at least these Marxists are giving us some hope. They're going to say, let's reverse this. Let's put the bad guys out of business. And let's put the good guys on top. So, and he reverse it. He reverse it. Put all the good guys on top. Here now are the proletariat, the little people, the workers. Okay? And here are the exploiters. Well, they're out of business. And all the property that they had now is up here. Only, the problem is, to help this thing really work, you need to have a party to watch over it, and you need to have the state, and then you need to have Marx. You know, and later it'll become, you know, Lenin and Stalin and Gorbachev. And every 70 years there'll be something wild. 70 years later, Lenin. 70 years later, Gorbachev. It's very interesting that Gorby, who is now one of the great world rulers in our country, living at our expense here, who is now the darling of the New World Order, the environmental green man, Gore's, you know, fellow. Now, he, who is 70 years and then 7 years, 140 years after Marx, he now decided to end communism. Isn't that wonderful? He's a liar. This will go out. Gorby, you're a liar. Why? Because he actually is furthering communism. It's just a trick. Just as Lenin played a trick on Marx, so Gorbachev played a trick on Lenin. But it's all part of the same idea, which is anti-Christianity. Get rid of Jesus. And the only thing binding this world is Jesus. Get rid of God with His Ten Commandments in the Old Testament, and get rid of Jesus with His love for the neighbor who has conscience in the New Testament. Just get rid of those bands, break that asunder, and let people do what they want to do. Which is, it'll go back to the ruthless few. Did you notice how we reversed all this? We gave the workers all the power. We took the means of production that was up here, and we put it down here. So that everybody could get, you know, when they're finally, this is all over, according to your need, you can get, and according to your ability, you can work. And, you know, it's wonderful. Well, actually, this was the transition. This is what it's going to be someday. But the transition is we have to actually have the party right now and the state right now and these few leaders up at the top because it has to be forced right now. No one will just do it willingly or inevitably like we thought. So we have to force it. We have to make it happen. Because this is a dialectical materialism. In other words, even though it's inevitable, it's material. It's not just idea. So we force it with material, force. And so the logic of this thing is you make it happen. You don't just watch it happen. So now we actually got back to the same deal. Now instead of the king, he's called Marx. Instead of the, you know, the Catholic Church or something, it's called the party. Instead of the middle class being here, the middle class is here. Only now instead of having liberty and freedom to do what they want to do, either debauch or do nice, they're forced also. You can only have so many children. You're told that women have to do this and men have to do that. Everything is defined for them, so there's no freedom whatsoever. And the bourgeoisie, the top leaders, we just either kill them or re-educate them. So this is not exactly your idea of happiness on earth, even though it's postponed for the future. What it is, it's a policy of extermination. It's a policy of being able to kill 60 million people in Russia, another 60 million in China. And it still goes on. I mean, it hasn't stopped. So you can kill literally millions and millions of people through this wonderful philosophy of hope. You see, there's something wrong when we turn away from God and we begin to listen to someone like this. Now, because of his background, because of the people he messed with, these universities, like he read a guy named Bauer. And then after he read him and Bauer said, you know, he was an atheist, then he attacked Bauer because Bauer wouldn't support him. And then he had other friends. And I could go through all of his friends, Ruge, all these different friends. But every one of them he would then despise later and destroy them. He might write, you know, volumes against some little article that a guy wrote. If he hated you, he got after you. This guy Marx was not a nice fellow. He was not a Christian. He was not a noble. He was not a humanitarian. He was not nice and friendly. He was like a Christian hypocrite, saying nice things in his writings and on the outside, and then in actual practice. I wish I could read you what he did to all his children. You know, first of all, he taught them all about, you know, there's no God and so on. But besides that, most of them committed suicide. He had lots of kids. And he destroyed his family. And he had a couple that, you know, somewhat liked him, and they also committed suicide after a while. He never took care of his family, never did a lick of work. He wanted Engels to support him all the time and other people to support him. And he got these big supporters from inside the witchcraft group. They have tremendous wealth. These people own it all. They have the ability to fund whatever they want to do. And he was just their spokesman. And you know what? This is just one aspect of a bigger program. This is just one thesis. There's actually an antithesis. That was the political side of it, with force. But there's also the Fabian Society, which is, let's do it gradually. This is the same philosophy, but you just do it gradually. Kind of reformist. Kind of the Menshevik approach. Then there's, and I won't tell you what all there is, but the point is, there are many prongs to this devilish web that would seek to subdue us. Now, why do we carry on? Why even try? These guys are so well armed and so clever and so on. Why go forward? I don't know. That's up to you. You want to lay down and join these people? You can. Nobody's stopping anybody. If you think that's powerful, great. They are. They can swagger. They can go to and fro. I find it to be totally demonic. And I find it to be something to oppose. And I'm opposing it. And I say it's not dead at all. Because that's nothing to do with the word communism or socialism. Nobody ever believed in any of that stuff anyway. It's completely a trick, a poem. Just poetry. All they wanted to do was destroy Christianity. Destroy private property. Destroy family. Destroy everything. And now our government, not communist at all, is doing everything the communists wanted. In fact, I'll read you in closing. It's my first closing. I'll read you in closing the Communist Manifesto, because it'd be interesting to see what the guy wrote and what's happening. A specter is haunting, this is the Communist Manifesto. A specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. All the powers of old Europe have entered into a holy alliance to exorcise this specter. Pope and Tsar, Metternich and Guizot, French radicals and German police spies. Where is the party in opposition that has not been decried as communistic by its opponents in power? Where the opposition that has not hurled the branding reproach of communism against the more advanced opposition parties, as well as against its reactionary adversaries? Two things result from this fact. One, communism is already acknowledged by all European powers to be itself a power. Two, it is high time that communists should openly, in the face of the whole world, publish their views, their aims, their tendencies, and meet this nursery tale of the specter of communism with a manifesto of the party itself. And then he goes on and tells about all the nations that are involved in it. Now, he has a little to say about class struggles and everything like that, and it's really very powerful. But one of the things that he says in here is, if you want to sum it all up, it's the abolition of private property. You know why? Because God demands that you have private property. How can you tithe if you don't have anything? How can you pay taxes if you don't have anything? How can you love your neighbor? How can you give to the poor? How can you do what God has said if you don't have anything? God actually, by giving you a command, is forcing you to be a property owner. He does not want you to be a slave. Are you hearing me? And therefore, you are responsible because you have something to be responsible with. That's how you teach a child responsibilities. You give him a little dog or something and say, you feed this dog. We did that with Margaret. We're still feeding that dog. Little dog is out there, you know. Margaret, can you hear that dog? Yes. Yes. Please go out and feed that dog. No, the point is responsibility. When you own something, when you possess something, when you have something, Dad, please give me that dog and I will take care of it totally. Well, anyway, it's not a problem. We like the dog, actually. I hated that dog in the beginning, but now I like that dog. Because he barks anytime anybody goes by or whatever, you know. Thank you, you know. So, at any rate. But you want to, if you want to have responsibility, you have to have something to be responsible with, some kind of power, some kind of a, you can't just be given a job without real authority and real power. Now, God demands of you to be a property owner. Communism said, we'll remove all private property. Of course, they didn't. Ceausescu, he had all kinds of private property, but he called it state property. That's interesting. You just say the state owns it, only you're the only one that gets to use it. Nobody else drove his Mercedes. Nobody else lived in his, I think it was 32, but I forget what the number is, some humongous number of palaces that he had throughout his country. One so huge, I mean, just a magnificent structure, umpteen stories high and, you know, covered acres. Just a house. That's for a communist leader who cares for the people. There's something, there's a problem here. Because that looks something like the billionaire bad guys. How come all the communist leaders, including Gorbachev, are billionaires? How come all the communists that I met lived in palaces who were leaders, doing well for themselves? Because it's a lie. It's only to take your private property, and if you're dumb enough to fall for that, we'll take it. And now the state here is taking it. Everything that they said would come under communism, we're doing voluntarily. We're actually voting all of our, all of these things into power, voluntarily. It's amazing. Communists had to do it with force, we're doing it voluntarily. Yes, yes, I'll give that up. Yes, how much more tax do you need? Okay, I'll be glad to do that. Yes, and we're just voting for one thing after another to strangle ourselves, to bury ourselves. Hello. Now, I don't care about any of this. It doesn't mean anything to me as a Christian. But Jesus said, no, Jim, I want you to care about this because you're a caretaker. And I want you not only to take care of yourself, I want you to take care of your neighbor too. You are your brother's keeper. And don't worry about all the people that are faking or lying or whatever. You will not be a ruthless so-and-so. And you will not be a liar. And you will not be a Satanist. Well, that is upon me. Now, whether you pick this up or not, that's between you and God. But here's the deal. And this guy's a good writer. Read the Communist Manifesto. All right, I'm going to read the last 10 things or whatever they are. Yeah, 10 things that communism is going to try to do. These measures will, of course, be different in different countries. Number one, abolition of property and land, application of all rents of land to public purposes. Two, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Three, abolition of all right of inheritance. Four, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Five, centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Six, centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. Seven, extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, cultivation of wastelands, improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. In other words, you just make people do all that. Eight, equal liability to all labor. Establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. In other words, force them. Nine, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries. Put them together. The gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of the population over the country. Put people in the city, out in the country, people in the country, in the city, so on. 10. Free education of all children in public schools. That sounds nice. Listen. Abolition of children's factory labor in its present form. That sounds nice. Listen. Combination of education with industrial production. That's called work, school to work. It's communist. Everything they want to do, we're doing it. Everything they want to do, we're doing it. Now, some people are fighting, yes. And you should. And you can win easily. If you know what you're doing. Well, on and on and on. This guy is a very powerful figure. He was a Satanist, someone who, whether published or not, he believed that God, and I read you some of his poetry, but he's got lots more, lots of writing. about that he's actually the servant of Satan. And that his whole intention was to bring the world to ruins, was to dance the dance of death with Satan, and to know that in the end, he'll get it. He even knew that. He even knew, I'm going to be destroyed in this. And his best friend, Engels also grew up as a Christian and got influenced by Marx and perverted by Marx and paid for him the whole time with all of his money. Spent over a million marks or whatever it was. And this guy constantly had a guilt conscience. Marx never did. But Engels did. And he kept thinking, you know, even after I do all these things that I'm doing, I still believe maybe God is going to save me. And he wrestled with that over and over again. Because I know what I'm doing is deliberately to destroy the church, the state, everything. I want to destroy everything. But, you know, I hope Jesus will, whom I'm attacking, I hope he will somehow forgive me anyway. And he had kind of a faith. What I'm trying to say is this. You can be a Christian and also be demonic. Now, you couldn't grow and you have to work that out. But I'm just telling you, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. No, don't be surprised. Because I know people are. I can't believe it. It's just a thought. You don't have to give in to it. These guys didn't know any better. They had no pastors. I say the church failed here miserably. If I had been their pastor. No, I mean, it's like, whoa, if you don't get the truth, you're under a lie. And you're in bondage. Millions of people have now died because of this, and millions more will. And now, the whole earth may come into slavery. By the way, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. God still has a program. God's still going to get His work done. And you and I are at the forefront. It's just now the odds are a little bit bad. The odds have gotten worse since we got big. Isn't that exciting? Boy, I can hardly wait till I get big. And then you get big and, whoa. Wish I was little. No. It's time to get excited, folks. Jesus is about to come back. Jesus is not worried about these guys. Stand up for Jesus. Listen, really, these guys have nothing to offer. They even know. When the Berlin Wall fell, by the way, it happened exactly on time. When the 1917 revolution, and then again in November of this, you know, last year, or whatever it was, 1988, and so on, that was the year everything happened. Gorbachev met with the Pope, Berlin Wall fell. I mean, everything took place and the whole thing came tumbling down. It was a lie, of course, because all it did was spread its poison over here. And now we invited him right in. Hey, come on in. You look friendly, humanitarian. You believe in the environment. Bushes are friendly everywhere. Hey. You didn't get that. Bushes. Now, but God has given us a program. I only say this so that you don't have to think about it. But don't be naive. Don't assume these are nice people. These are not nice people. They all write, I studied everybody they studied, I've read all their junk, all their stuff. I've imbibed it. It's very potent, powerful. When you read Proudhon, and when you read, you know, all these guys, Feuerbach basically said, everything out there is just something from within here. It's exactly Marx. In other words, everything is an economic thing. It's just me and my selfish self-interest. So Marx tried to change that by saying, well, let's force people then to be nice. But all he did was fall into Satanism. Black magic, witchcraft, where you reverse everything. And that's what exactly what this is. It's a total reversal. Here's where the Pope is, then you put Marx. Here's where the Catholic cardinals are, put the party. Here's where the people are, you know, the whole thing. It's exactly the same. Nothing happened. Nothing was different. It's just that now Stalin was the Tsar. January 22, 1905, Georges Gapon, he was an Orthodox priest. He led all these people, 1905, just after the turn of the century, to the Tsar, Nicholas. And he said, you know, we have some grievances. And they read their grievances, you know, better pay and, you know, some rights and so on. kind of like the Americans. And there were several thousand people, and the Cossacks lined up, and they said, no. And they said, look, let us through, because we know the Tsar is like our father. And even though he's been oppressing us, we have faith. They had no arms. They weren't armed at all. We have faith that he'll listen to us and grant us some of these things, because it's right. Please let us come through. What you don't know is they had said before this march that you either give us what we want, we either get freedom and happiness now, or we are going to die. Now this is written out. Father Gippon had written this. So they really weren't there kind of like sweet innocent. They were there to demand these rights. And though they didn't have any weapons, the Cossacks were lined up and they said, kill them. And they killed over 1,000 that day. They wounded another 1,000, and the rest ran. Now, after that, the Tsar was finished. The Tsar was a corrupt institution, propped up by a corrupt religion. Even though it was Christian. That was Christianity in the service of junk, not based on the Bible. The Reformation never went to Russia. So it isn't surprising that men will use as an excuse to put their own dreams in place the fact that God didn't do anything. I myself could think that way. God, you know, you really aren't doing much. Couldn't be my fault. What can one man do? And God always says, yeah, kind of is your fault. No. Come on, God. You're God. He says, I know. Let's talk about it. Let's have some time together. Oh, man. Just do it, will you? You're going to ruin my life. He said, Jim, you know, let me forget how bad the thing is, how many enemies are arrayed against you. How many know with God, you're in the majority? If you just have God on your side, you're all right. History isn't written yet. The history that's been written has been written by the winners. We haven't read the real history. The book of Acts is not over. When it's all finished, you're going to see a very different history. When we stand at the end of history and look back. Now that's our fiction, that's our myth, that's our idea. We can't prove that. There's no proof here for this. We can't scientifically put this in a lab. This is just a faith. Marx decided, hey, I'll introduce another faith. And I'll say it's not faith, I'll say it's science. I'll say it's inevitable. I'll say it's historically necessary and so on. But he just said it. Now, we also say it, but we say it's faith. I mean, I've never seen heaven. The only thing we can see is down here, we're doing some things differently, and I like what I see. So, if what you see in the small experiment works, maybe like you got peace, or maybe like, you know, you're doing what God says and it works for your life, your marriage, and so on, that's real. That testimony is real. It's not just a theory. There's power to it, but not the gun. This power is spiritual. I believe that God wants demonstrations on the earth of something better than the church and the state that Marx attacked. And we don't have it. We've got to admit, we're a long way from it. I mean, really, I would despair if you were taking odds on the thing. I would say God is really... There are some hopeful signs, but they're teeny-weeny small. They're not huge. I know you can hear of a million-man march and so on, but I don't know if that's so impressive to me. A lot of that's kind of naive. And I know you can get a lot of Marxes out of that kind of stuff. I don't want to rely on that. I want to do the real thing all the way. We do have an enemy out there. It is Karl Marx and his crowd. But the real enemy is Satan. Let's try to win Karl and all his buddies, you know, Sigmund. Let's get them all on our side. You know what? They know they don't have the truth. I guarantee it. They know they don't. What they are there for is an indictment against you and I to say, but if you have it, then why aren't you living it? Yeah. And they're right. The world, I tell you, the world is right now crafting religions. Businessmen are crafting religions because religion has failed. They're saying the church is not even close to being the church. We're going to produce out of business a church that'll be a real church. And they're gathering millions of Christians. Their meetings are bigger than ours. These pyramids that they're building and all that kind of stuff, they're offering dollars along with it. Pretty good deal. You get the best of both worlds. Hello. But they're going to replace Christianity because it's worthless. Christianity has not worked. And they're Christians, too. I mean, these are people that are Christian. But they don't think that the Christian church has done its job. They don't think the pastors are really Christian. So they're the new pastors. Well, I'm all for it. Praise God. I don't have any problem with it, except that it might not be what they say. It might just be another shot in the dark, another naive thing that we're running after. I think I'll stick with God's crummy old thing. This is God's crummy thing, right here. A local church sitting in a, you know, an environment somewhere that doesn't look like it's going anywhere. This is, I like this. I mean, I really, it is depressing. It is depressing. It is. I mean, we've been here for years, and what are we doing? I don't know. Hello? But you know what? I'm not depressed. I'm just telling you what it looks like. I mean, I'm not going to, somebody from the outside said, you know, that's really depressing. I think, yeah, well, it looks that way, yeah. But I'm not. I'm not at all. I'm excited. I'm optimistic. I'm confident. But I'll tell you what, I'm not, my eyes are not blind. It is not working. Just on the surface of things, I would lie if I said it was working. That's a faith statement. Yeah, it's doing great. That's a faith statement. That is real out of faith. But I'm not worried about y'all doing it. It's right here. You see, the problems are all right here. If I don't get a hold of it, you might. I hope you do. But if I don't get a hold of it, it's harder for y'all to get a hold of it. You can get a hold of it, but you won't go very far because you got to get past these leader types. And we don't have good Christian leaders. I'm sorry to say, I wish we had Christian leaders that were truly devoted to God, as devoted as Marx was to his faith. We need Christian people and Christian leaders that are fearless. And this thing isn't over. But if you were to look at the thing, we don't look as good. We look like we're in the Midian thing, you know, 300, and they got, you know, hundreds of thousands. We always look like we're on the bad side. Well, actually, that's where you're supposed to be in the Bible. So I don't know if you're excited as I am. I like being nowhere. I like being small. I like little miracles taking place among us that are real. Amen. They're slow. They're not, you know, we're not getting on TV to show them off. You know, we're not writing any books. We're not doing anything to advertise or tell anybody or coax people or make them feel guilty or whatever. Just let it happen. Let's see if there isn't a God. Amen. I mean, if there were ever a church that needed God, it's us. We don't do that much, you know. So all we do is tell how great God is, and we don't do much. Isn't that right? It's right. You know, we do lift up God. But then nothing much takes place. We're all just, yes, isn't God?